The mind needs a seat at the table, but the mind should not be at the head of the table. Our intuition, our heart should be at the head of the table. That intuition, that deep inner knowing from which all answers can come.
You are listening to Personal Development Mastery, the podcast that empowers you with the simple and consistent actions to take that will help you create a life of purpose and fulfillment. I am your host, Agi Keramidas, and this is episode 396. If you want to discover how to use your emotions as an inner guidance system, then this episode is for you. By listening today, you will see how integrating meditation with plant medicine can transform your emotional well-being, and you will also understand a way to rewrite your emotional narrative and release trauma. It's all about deep emotional healing using powerful ancient allies. Before we dive in, if you enjoy listening and appreciate what we're doing here, the simple, quick favor I'm asking of you is to click the subscribe button. Now let's get started. Today it is my pleasure to speak with Becca Williams. Becca, you are an experienced emotions therapist and plant medicine facilitator with expertise in emotional and trauma recovery. Through your innovative emotional liberation therapy, you blend ancient healing modalities with Western neuroscience and psilocybin microdosing in order to guide individuals on transformative journeys of self-discovery and trauma recovery. Becca, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you, Agi. It's so nice to be with you also.
Becca, today I'm looking forward to exploring with you, first of all, our emotions, and you talk about the inner guidance system of the emotions. So that's a topic that I really want to explore with you. But also how plant medicine, and in particular psilocybin and microdosing of psilocybin, can assist with, as you call it, emotional liberation. So before we go there, I would like to hear a little bit about your the shift in your life and your career. You know, I know that you used to be a journalist and doing radio, and you turned into healing and a very different line of work. So tell me a bit about that shift.
So let's see, I'm going to try to give you the abridged version, but I came into this life with a difficult childhood, and it was volatile, it was dangerous, and I had a parent who was mentally ill, who medicated with alcohol, and was angry and abusive. So that's what I was raised in. I was in that pressurized space for all my childhood. And so coming out of it, there was a lot of trauma associated with that. Of course, you know, when we're young and, you know, we're 16, 17, and we know that we feel yucky, but we can't really connect the dots. And actually beyond that, as a young adult and into adulthood, I searched, I looked under a lot of rocks to feel better, you know, from you know, the Western approach, which is talk therapy, to spirituality and meditation. But all of those things did not work for me. And you know, there was this draw. It hurts, because, the anxiety in being, you know, going out or interacting or whatever. But at the same time, okay, it was such a strange thing that growing up, I was, I was rejected. I mean, I was neglected. I was abandoned. The message for me growing up was that, I was inconsequential and unworthy. And so it was beaten into me, right? And so for me growing up, I needed as much attention as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, as human beings, we're looking to avoid rejection and seek approval. And so this is what I was doing. And so I found I was a writer in school. I studied journalism, and in college, I studied journalism, and I found television. I found television news. So even though I loved to write, I found that when I was on television, right, that I got attention. Oh, Becca, you know, you're so smart. You're so, you look so good. You write so well. And so, because I had no internal resources. So I, even though I loved being a journalist, and we have to look at this, right, as far as our professions are concerned, that there's always a part that we're attracted to. But what's the other piece? What is the underlying piece? And for me, it was getting that attention. Mm-hmm. So I really struggled for decades getting that attention. And I was, you know, in therapy. And so about 10 years ago, this work called Emotional Liberation found me. And it was about feeling into how I was feeling and why I was feeling it and what do I need to do about it. And there was neuroscience involved, but it really leaned and leans heavily on yogic science and the Kundalini tradition, which is a very active, expressive form of meditation. I call it the unmeditation meditation, essentially. And what it does, it just goes in and stirs up these emotions that are tethered to the trauma. This is what we learn in yogic science, yeah? And we're able to stir that up so that we're able to process it and release it. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing this in 2014, I went into it with the creator and developer of the work, who's been a longtime mentor for me now, among many, many other important mentors. But I studied with him for 5 years, and I was certified, as one of his first, students because it's so new. He wrote the book called Senses of the Soul in 2013. And then I, engaged with this in 2014. And once I was able to heal myself from these emotions that I was a slave to, because, you know, something would come out of left field. Somebody would say something, somebody would do something, or an errant thought, and I was off to the races. And I did not want to live like that anymore. As people who do live like that, no, I don't want to live like that anymore. So once this started, what can I say, evaporating, I saw life through a whole new set of eyes. Augie, I was reset. And coming out of this, I was producing a television show at the time. I said, oh my gosh, I'm looking around and I'm seeing these burning bodies of people who are in, you know, who are wrestling with trauma. And it's like, oh my God, I have something that can help these people. Mm-hmm. And so I really did. I said, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. So I have carved out a practice over the last 10 years in doing this work. Mm-hmm.
I highlighted the word reset that you said towards the end, but also before I move on, there is one question that comes to mind. You said at some point that you had tried all sorts of different things and they were not working for you. And my quick question is, what would you say to someone listening right now that finds themselves in that spot, that they have tried all sorts of things as far as they are aware, but still they don't feel they have made much progress in terms of, you know, releasing any burden or whatever it is that troubles them in the subconscious? What would you tell them?
Well, I could tell them that there's hope, that you don't have to feel this way. And I would certainly mirror to them what I went through. And, you know, that old line about the teacher appears when we're ready. Mm-hmm. I probably massacred that quote, but you get the gist. We get the gist here. And for people who come, who connect with me, I think the timing is right. I tend to think that from the hundreds of people that I have worked with over the years, There seems to be a through line in that people are in awareness. They are on an awakening path. Now, you could argue philosophically that we're all on a continuum of moving toward wholeness. But I like to say that, yes, we're on the continuum, but at some point we realize that we're on that path, that we're on the continuum. And before that, it's just really very unconscious. And, you know, most of the people in the world are in that unconscious space. But those people who are starting to wake up and go, there has to be something better, and they seek. And there's a reason why we call people seekers, is because they're seeking ways to be out of their suffering. That's why we seek. And whether we go into a retreat and feel better for, you know, New Age has been a bumpy road to go down, because essentially at the core of New Age, it's don't feel that way. Don't feel those bad feelings. Feel the light. Feel the happiness. Be happy. But the dirty, not so secret is that if we push those feelings down, they're going to come up mm-hmm. when we least expect it.
Yes.
And so what we're doing is changing it around. When we learn what we're feeling and how we're feeling it, we can identify, we can be aware, we can be in it and move it through as we do it. Now, of course, the more we do this, the better we get at it. So there's hope. Yes. And I would say to those people to check out what I have to offer here.
Great. So let's move then to the emotions, which is, we've already explained a few things about it. But you talk about emotions as your inner guidance system. So tell me, where do these emotions come from, first of all, and how can we look at them or use them as a guidance system? So tell me a bit more about this.
Sure. So emotions are energy in motion. Everything is energy.
Yes.
Everything. And we are energy, and our emotions are energy. And it comes, emotion comes from a French that actually reaches back into Latin. And I'm forgetting exactly what that Latin term was, but it meant, instability, agitation with relation to those emotions. Mm-hmm. To be able to identify them is very important. And there is a trend out there today where there's sort of a beginning to understand, oh, you need to be with your emotions. And it's sort of this generic kind of delivery. And so the work we need to do is, so often people do not know what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. We have a palette of seven difficult emotions. There's families within the seven. So for instance, one of the biggest, of course, is fear and anxiety. So fear and anxiety is a family. Nervousness is a form of fear. Then there's fear, there's anxiety, panic, terror. That is all a family mm-hmm. of fear. And so we want to understand that when we're in terror, we are very fearful of something. And when we have a panic attack, we are scared. The bejesus has been scared out of us because we fear something. Mm-hmm. And so many of us have been stuffing this for years that we don't know what we're afraid of. And a lot of the stuff that we're afraid of is old stuff that we can let go, but we don't know that. Mm-hmm. We don't know that until we go in. So this palette of difficult emotions is, it's fear and anxiety. We have anger and depression, sadness. Desire is an interesting one. And desire is, because we don't think of it in terms of an emotion, mm-hmm. but desire is a very important emotion. In fact, it's the mother of all emotions, because we have to have a desire for something in order to do it. So for instance, gee, I want to pick up this pen and write with it. That's a desire. I want to have a loving, reciprocal, respectful relationship is a desire, but we don't know and have been never taught how to get that. So desire is about neediness, and there's, you know, that's when we're needy, that just feels really yucky, and we strike out. Is this what I need? Is this what I need? What about this? Mm. And we don't know, so we need to back up and be very focused on what we desire. And the last two is guilt. And the last one, but a very important one, is shame. Mm-hmm. And so shame is, you know, everything underneath that. It's rejection. It's a sense of unworthiness. It's a feeling of not belonging. However you want to put it, you know, a lot of people don't want to say I suffer from shame because it's such a shame, right? So we kind of dance around it. But that whole category is really shame.
Hi, it's Agi here with an important message for you mastery seekers. Do you ever want to concentrate, but just can't get your brain to focus on the task in front of you? If this happens to you, you're not alone. It also happens to me, and in fact, 40% of people say they have trouble concentrating. The good news is that if you find it difficult to focus, I've got a solution for you. I'm really excited to be partnering with BrainFM. BrainFM is a great app that I use every day. It uses functional music backed by scientific research, and for me, it allows me to focus deeply and concentrate on the important task I have to do at that time. And that ability to work undistracted makes a huge difference. So if you want to be able to laser focus on your work, then you, Mastery Seekers, can now get 20% off a BrainFM subscription. Thousands of people have given it 5-star reviews. Find out why and get 20% off at brain.fm/agi. If you enjoy this episode, can you think of one person that would find it useful and share it with them? I'd really appreciate it. It helps the show grow, and you will also be adding value to people you care about. Thank you. And now let's get back to the episode. Thank you for this explanation of those 7 different difficult, as you said, emotions.
Yes.
And focusing on this particular, the difficult emotions rather than the, let's say, the positive or the other ones. How can one use this when you say inner guidance system? That obviously for me, it implies that emotion, when it appears, it guides you towards something, provided, of course, that you become aware of it, as you were saying earlier, and become conscious and you're not walking your day, distracting yourself.
Bingo.
So let's say that one is, and I would like to think that someone listening to this conversation, he or she is aware that there are, maybe not all the time, but often aware of the emotional state that they get into. How can this be used as a guidance system? So how, talk to me more about the guidance system in particular.
Mm-hmm. So this is where the meditation comes in, mm-hmm. which in Kundalini is a combination of meditation, breath work, and movement mm-hmm. that we use. We have about 60 different practices that we use that correspond to the various emotions. It's a brilliant system. It's a brilliant system hailing from all these yogis, you know, sitting in caves, coming, you know, meditating for all this, you know, for hours a day, and then handed down. Let's see, where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought. Let's see. Where was I, Augie?
You were about to explain about the inner guidance system of yes. the emotions.
Yes, so thank you. So importantly, what happens is the mind needs a seat at the table, but the mind should not be at the head of the table. Our intuition, our heart should be at the head of the table. That intuition, that deep inner knowing from which all answers can come. But the mind, you know, that's why talk therapy is not particularly effective. Because I remember for the years that I was in talk therapy, I'd be driving, you know, to the therapist and thinking, what am I going to talk about today? And you cannot heal from up here. You have to heal by dropping in and being in touch here. And the beautiful thing that the developer and creator of Emotional Liberation gave us, and that is his name is GM Khalsa, is the understanding, and we are like in the Stone Ages as far as emotions are concerned. It's amazing. I think it kind of got lost in that divergence of religion and science. You know, somewhere it got lost there. But when we are when we can go inward and be in touch with these emotions, it's a bridge to our soul. So think of it in these terms, that the difficult emotions that are coming up are asking us to be in touch with our soul. And so how do we do that? We need to go quiet, but like so many of us, and it's, you know, the big all over, right? Meditate. Well, I got to tell you, I did a Buddhist meditation, Kabbalah meditation, kind of freelance meditation. And I just couldn't, I had this pounding thoughts. And then of course the answer is, well, you just have to sit and sit long enough where the pounding thoughts quiet down. That never happened to me. I mean, I did, you know, retreats. I did silent retreats. I did weekend retreats where, you know, you're just sitting on the cushion and breathing, and it never helped me. But what, because, and I think that a lot of it has to do with this busy, distracting world out there. And so we're running. And then it's like, okay, you need to meditate, sit down, put your butt on the pillow and shut up and go inward. You know? And that's really hard for a lot of people in our culture. It was very difficult for me. So when I encountered this work, what happens is that we first feed the mind about the emotions, talking to our mind about the emotions so they know that this is what we're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And then so for instance, in my coursework, what I always do is where I lecture for one session, and we meet twice a week, and then the other session we practice, and so that the practice is where we go inward and we do this work where we're moving, where we're breathing, and the important piece is that we're here. You know, I talk clients and students through this emotion, because if you're feeling crappy, you know, why would I tell you, okay, put that aside. We're going to be walking, close your eyes and breathe. And we're going to be walking along the water and into the forest. And, you know, all I want to do with this terrible feeling. Oh my God. And so what we do in emotional liberation is go toward the feeling. Mm-hmm. I invite people to go to their feeling while we're doing this work. And it's ripe. It is so ripe. Whatever is knocking loudest on your head, bring it, and we will bring it up. We will process it and we will release it. And what happens is that the more that you do this, the better you get at it, to a point of when you're out and about, you're not on the cushion anymore. You're not doing this work anymore. Maybe my partner said something that I took in a bad way. That didn't feel good. What was that all about? Wow. And then I process it and I let it go. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's, you know, that's the practice way. But I have clients who, you know, after learning just the foundations of the course, they hit the, you know, they hit the decks running with it.
I was about to ask you this because the way I understood it, so you said, and I like the word stir it up when it happens, bring it up, then process it and release it. And I suppose there is a technique to do that, which you just answered now with your last example. And I can also attest to what you were saying earlier about meditating. When you have a bout of anger, or the last thing that you will do is sit down and meditate, because it is completely against how you're feeling, and it tends to consume you. If that is,
I like that word. Yes, it tends to consume you.
Yeah, it overwhelm is another word for maybe for different emotions. It takes over anyway. Even your rational thinking at times, especially with anger, but I think with other emotions.
We go back to that when the hurt was inflicted. You know, say let's say in our childhood, for instance, and we haven't processed it. When my partner says something to me that is reminiscent of what my mother used to say to me. I go back to being that six year old with my partner, because I haven't released that stuff yet, and it's coming up now so that I have another opportunity to release it. What an intelligent biological and spiritual being we are.
We certainly are, and in a way, it's a shame that we have been told all these other things about emotions and how they are. And you were saying earlier about, you know, go and be happy all the time, or which is that's how we many of us or most of us have been. I use the word programmed while we were.
And it oftentimes started out when we were babies or when we were children. Because if you don't have something, you know, if you don't have something to say, little boy or little girl, that is happy or good, if you're going to complain or you're going to cry or whatever, I don't want to hear it. I do not want to hear it. So consequently, you know, some of my most popular workshops are on anger, and most of the people who turn out for them are women. and what happens is that we have been told to be small, to stay small. And that takes its toll. And a lot of this is the anger comes up. It's a ready, hot emotion, like armor that comes up because there's a huge, deep hurt underneath that. And it's so much more painful to feel the hurt than the anger. And there's different ways of people getting angry. You know, there's the outward, the nuclear option. And then there are those who go inward, and it might be complaining or grumbling or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Extroverted, passive. And so what we need to do is settle down the anger so that we can actually give the hurt that comes up some time and attention.
Thank you. That's useful. And Becca, another element with this, the approach of emotional liberation therapy, from what I understand, is psilocybin microdosing. Can you first tell me what led you to combine those two?
Yeah, it's a great question, Augie. Way back in college, and I'm a woman of a certain age, so you know, way back when things were illegal, somebody turned me on to, you know, smoking cannabis in college, and I found that it really settled the anxiety down. And so I started self-medicating all the way through for decades with cannabis because it helped. The only issue with that, and I have a particular protocol when I work with people with cannabis, because I started out doing cannabis elevation service ceremonies in Denver, where, of course, you know, cannabis is legal, before the psilocybin. And but what happened for me was that once I was no longer under the influence of the cannabis, then these emotions would come back. So it was palliative, but it wasn't enduring or permanent. And so so fast forward to 2014, when I was introduced to emotional liberation and this work, and it was an online program with about 12 of us in it. I like the small groups also. I try to keep them small so that there's personalized attention, because these are delicate matters that we're talking about, right? So I started doing just a little bit of cannabis with the practices. And I let my teacher know, and he said, well, you know, you do that, Becca. That's not my thing. I don't do exogenous. I said, well, you know, so what happened in this program over the year, in the second year, is that it felt, compared to the others, that my progress was accelerating, that I was able to move these things through faster, and that feeling of it's very important that you don't get stoned, that you need to. That's why I always talk about a 2-to-1 CBD to THC, or 1-to-1, because the CBD in research shows that it calms the fight or flight syndrome. And so by virtue of that combination, it's great, because then the THC comes in and amplifies the feeling that we're working with. And so it was that's how I started out with people, with the cannabis. And of course, always in my courses, always teaching people how to do it. And then about 3 years in, I realized personally, in yogic science, you know, we have various bodies, and including the ethereal body and the emotional body. And you won't hear this in hardcore Western science, but I believe we know now, this is science, that trauma is lodged in our body, in the tissues of our body, in our nervous system. And of course, the question is, well, how do we get that out? Well, what I found is that I moved through all this stuff, but the last thing, and I see this in a lot of people, is shame. And I have this little bit of shame that can come up, and I believe it's just deep, the layers in my body, in my energetic body, is deep. And so I started working with a little bit of psilocybin, and it went deeper. I love cannabis. I love it as a medicine. I mean, you could say that all cannabis is medicine, even when somebody does it just for relaxation, or going out and watching the sunrise or whatever it is. That's all for well-being, you know? And so this idea that we're going to pocket cannabis into medical and recreational, or adult use, as we call it, is absolute, or spiritual. I mean, that's my bailiwick, is spiritual use of cannabis. But the idea that it's not just one big wonderful medicine, you know, whatever it takes to get it legalized. I digress. But anyway, I started doing the microdosing, and I felt this very stubborn layer percolate up and was released, and it was, whoa. Wow. So I started offering it. It was, you know, I worked during, through COVID. Of course, people loved being online during COVID and getting together and having community. And I brought this up, and I helped people microdose. And the results were, nothing short of game changing. And so, you know, the beautiful part about emotional liberation, it is a contained system in a method in and of itself. People do it without any kind of exogenous substance. But when you add the plant medicine very judiciously, it accelerates the progress. And so that's why I include it in my work.
That's fascinating, the whole thing that you said, first about the cannabis and then about the psilocybin and how it accelerates this this process, as you say. And there was a phrase that I remember reading in your description. You refer to it as a psychic vitamin. So I like that.
Well, I'm trained as a clinical nutritionist. I'm a registered dietitian. I do like supplementation, you know. And so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Great. Becca, this is a truly fascinating conversation. There is so many things there that I believe we just started uncovering, but again, it is enough for someone listening to take the next step, whatever that is. And speaking of that, where would you direct the listener who wants to find out more about you and what you do?
I would just direct everybody to go to my website, which is so easy. It's myname.org. So it's BeccaWilliams.org. I'm on all the social media, but, you know, anybody, you ask anybody who's worked in the space of cannabis, social media for cannabis is really dicey. They cancel you, they shadow ban you, they just bottleneck you. So I always invite people to go directly to my website because mm-hmm. that's where it all is.
There are still so many prejudices and misconceptions and things that come from, you know, 100 years ago. They still are within us, but I believe there is more awareness and more enlightenment about the true nature of all these things. And even referring to cannabis as plant medicine, as you did earlier, which of course it is, even that changes completely the way someone perceives it versus if you tell them it's a drug or a narcotic or whatever else. Anyway, regardless of that,
the word use too, we try to stay away from
the word use.
Cannabis users, you know, psilocybin users.
Yes. In a way, we are now computer users because we're having this conversation.
That's right. And I just want to say at BeccaWilliams.org, you can find all my masterclass courses and, you know, from online courses to live courses to the higher end of retreats. I do more and more retreats. My next one is for October 2024. That's the big one. And you can find all the information on the website as well.
That's great. Becca, before we wrap up today, I have two questions, quick questions that I always ask my guests. And the first one is, what does personal development mean to you?
Personal development means an enlarged awareness of what we're doing and how we're doing it. So it's more about being than doing. And once we are so sensitized to working with our emotions, we just surf the waves of uncertainty with grace and perseverance. And it's a beautiful place to be.
And a hypothetical question. If you could go back in time and meet your 18-year-old self, what's one piece of advice you would give her?
Honey, it's going to be all right. You're going to be in a good place. Just hang in there.
Becca, I want to thank you very much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I think we covered a lot in such a short amount of time. I want to wish you all the very best with with what you do, both personally and professionally, and all the other elements that you combine. I will leave it to you for your parting words. Ideally, what I would like is some actionable parting wisdom for the listener.
Actionable parting wisdom. I think what you can do, what anybody can do to introduce into their lives right here is something that I call do-overs. So it makes you very aware of interactions. You can start with your partner, a very good friend. You both have to be on the same page in agreement. But if I snap at you, Ari, And Augie, excuse me, if I snap at you, Augie, you can either say, Becca, that didn't feel good. I'd like to have a do-over. Or if I snapped and realized the error of my ways, I'd want to come back to you and say, you know what? I'd like to have a do-over on that. So my partner and I do this a lot, and it really smooths out our relationship, where if somebody is grumpy or grouchy or short, right, one of us can, and it builds on one another. The other day I found that he was grumpy and said something, and then I said something, right? And about 10 minutes later, I realized how I reacted, and I brought it up and said I wanted a do-over. So he actually took his part where he was grouchy and redid that, and then I redid that, and it brings smiles. Sometimes it brings laughs and giggles, but importantly, it brings deeper respect between people.
It certainly does. Thank you so much. I will the do-over, as you said, it is such an intriguing concept to do. I think maybe from how I imagine myself doing it now, the challenge possibly would be when you offer that you want to do a do-over, and the other person, because of what has happened, have gone into their own story and response.
Right.
So that's
right.
It is both people would have to agree to do that. When one offers the
exactly.
do-over, the other to step out of the ego trip that they maybe have gone
right.
into and get present again. So,
and it's a blanket policy between two people that you can do this anytime. It has to be that way.
And before I end today's episode, if you enjoy this podcast, can you think of one person that would find it useful and share it with them? I'd really appreciate it. It helps the show grow, and you also add value to people you care about. Thank you. And until next time, stand out, don't fit in,